Hello, funky listeners, and welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. This is your host, Kyle.
And this is your host, Peter.
Yay.
Yay.
What are we talking about today, Peter? I know we just got off of our awesome vidcast for our 125th episode.
That's right.
Never to do that again.
That's true. So yes, we're finally back to this is a regular old audio version, which yes. I like a lot better. It's easier for many reasons. So today, we've actually wanted to do this for a little while, but we finally got around to it. You may not know, listeners, that in 1978, a movie came out called The Wiz, and basically it's a musical reimaginement of The Wizard of Oz, which stars such actors or slash musicians as Diana Ross and Michael Jackson. And we actually did mention it briefly. Which episode was that? Oh, I think it was about funk actors who became, or funk singers who became, or tried acting.
Mm-hmm.
I think we mentioned this one with primarily Michael Jackson.
Yes.
But, you know, that was when we discovered that this was a thing, and it sounded like a cool idea, so we decided to watch the movie and give it a review, because we wanted to.
Yeah, so, as Peter was saying, this movie's based off the musical of the same name. Funny enough, the musical was insanely popular, and yet this film adaptation that basically Motown bought the rights to the musical to create a film adaptation for it. And basically this film was a massive flop because it didn't hit any of the same notes, no pun intended, as the musical. And it was weird. From what I researched, they stripped a lot of stuff out and added things that were like kind of nonsensical. So it was like a bastardization of the original storyline. Funny enough, and now I don't know if this is the reason for it, the screenplay for the movie was written by Joel Schumacher, who, those of you may know, was the director of the really terrible Batman movie with George Clooney. The famous one where the bat suit had nipples.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was him. So I don't know if this was like the start of his destruction of all that is good and holy.
Might have been.
But, yes.
So I didn't realize that I guess I probably should have done better research, but I didn't realize, because I knew that there was a musical version of this, but I didn't realize that it spawned the movie rather than the other way around.
Yeah, no, the musical was really popular, so of course they're like, hey, let's cash in on this. Huh. And made a movie. Funny enough, too, the director that they picked for the movie, Sidney Lumet, directed such movies as 12 Angry Men, Dog Day Afternoon, and Network, which all three were like insanely popular films and very good Academy Award-winning films. Oh, it said he actually did not win one himself, but he won an honorary award. And yet they chose him to direct this movie, and the movie was like a massive flop. It's just kind of sad. I think it tainted everyone that came in contact with it.
Now, the first thing I was going to ask before we jump into our own like experience watching this.
Yes.
I was going to ask just like your quick impressions of how you felt about the movie, although I'm kind of getting a vibe of it from what you've said so far.
I didn't like it. I don't know how to describe it, but like everything that had me excited for the movie, the fact that Diana Ross was in it, Michael Jackson, was like stripped away when I realized that how poorly utilized they were in the film, and B, how little the film, I mean, obviously it's supposed to be a play on The Wizard of Oz, but like realizing how little the film really stuck to that storyline other than just the bare basics. And for some reason, the dog Toto was the same exact dog. I remember I was like, wait, isn't that the same breed of dog that Toto was in the original? If it was true to the fact that like it was an all black film, it should have been like a pit bull or Rottweiler or something, or Doberman Pinscher,
a chocolate lab.
That's terrible. That's worse than mine.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I don't know if you just want me to give my opinion of the different parts of the movie. If you do, you want to, do we want to walk through the plot of it?
I mean, not necessarily. I think this discussion will be interesting though, because I actually kind of feel the opposite of you.
You liked it?
I really liked it.
You asshole.
I can see why you wouldn't though, and I can see why people watching this wouldn't like it.
Okay.
But it resonated with me pretty well personally.
Okay. Well, how about this? How about, like, I'll describe some of the things I didn't like about it, and then if those were things you liked or opposite of things you like, we can kind of go back and forth.
Sure.
Okay. First couple things I thought that was funny was you realize very quickly, again, I have not seen the musical, so I'm sure the musical probably would have had me realize this beforehand, that the movie basically takes place in mostly Harlem, I think, and obviously New York as a whole, I assume.
Yeah.
Or some sort of weird blackization of New York. I don't know how to describe it. But from the outset of the movie, Diana Ross's character of Dorothy is kind of a whiny little bitch. Like, the first song she sang was like, I'm scared, bleh. And then she gets to the Land of Oz and, you know, the whole, like, weird munchkin thing, which don't even get me started on what the fuck that was supposed to be. Because it was basically like a ghetto playground.
That scene was probably my least favorite in the entire movie. And then, when she first enters Oz.
Yeah, and then she's like, I'm scared, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you to some extent there. It took me like literally half. This is a 2-hour long movie, by the way.
Yeah.
It took me probably at least half of the movie to figure out why she was the way that she was. And in the beginning of the movie, they kind of established her as, because there's like a whole, it was Christmas, right? So they have like the whole extended family over, and there's, you know, probably 20 or 30 people there. But I had a hard time figuring out, like, was she like a maid? Was she actually related to them? Like, why was she so quiet and scared of everybody?
She was related to them because I remember the I don't know if it was like her mom or whatever, the fat lady talked to her and was like, hey, you should take that job and get the fuck out. Like,
right, yeah.
So no, I don't know.
It started to make sense to me a bit. I think she was kind of, I would say, I guess early 20s, maybe.
Yeah, I think she was supposed to be.
And, you know, I think she was just kind of scared to get out in the world, because they said something like, I don't remember what the line was, but it was like, you've never been south of 125th Street or something. So, obviously, she...
It's like the song.
I mean, across 110th Street.
Same thing.
I just think of what it was.
24 streets over. It took me a second.
But there's this whole establishing thing of, like, she's never really seen the world or anything, and she's kind of scared to go out and meet people. So, to me, eventually, I wasn't really sure why this whole... I think eventually kind of sunk in for me that maybe she has, like, social anxiety or something. Like, she seemed, like, really apprehensive to, like, talk with anybody or...
Yeah.
Outside or anything. But I mean, obviously, like, the whole journey through Oz, like, helps her through that or whatever.
I suppose that makes sense. So, yeah, I don't know. That was my feeling of her through most of the movie. And then, like, obviously, we agree that the Munchkin Land or whatever the hell that was supposed to be was really freaking weird. And all the little Munchkin people came out of the graffiti walls.
Yeah, that was a really weird scene.
That was trippy. But the first character they introduce in the movie, obviously besides her, is the Scarecrow, played by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool, it's Michael Jackson in a really fucking weird suit, but whatever. And...
Well, he's a Scarecrow.
Yeah. And, okay, did the guys dressed up as the crows that were attacking him remind you at all of the crows from Dumbo?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was like the same character. It was
right?
So weird.
It was like the weird black Jim Crow thing. I don't even know. That was weird to me.
Yeah.
But, and I'm like, oh, cool, Michael Jackson. You know, it's a musical, so he's going to sing and shit and do his awesome Michael Jackson dance, because he's Michael Jackson. He's big for dancing. The first, and I believe only solo that he got in the film, was just him singing while strapped up on like a scarecrow pole thing. Didn't dance. He just bobbed around like a weirdo.
That's a good point.
And I'm just like, dude, he's like the dancing pop king of pop. Like, let him dance.
That's a good point, because I did enjoy his character, his interpretation of that character.
Yeah,
because it's a little bit different from the original. But you have a good point there. I never really thought about it. Like, he didn't have any iconic like dancing parts of this, and that was like a big thing of it, like that was his shtick.
Yeah, basically. That's why I felt like he was so underutilized in the movie. He only had one solo song, and they didn't even have him dance for that song. I'm just like, dude,
it's an interesting point.
It's Michael Jackson. What I did think was funny, though, was that he kept pulling out like little fortune cookie quotes out of his
suit.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that was cool.
Another thing I thought was weird really quick, the guy that played the Tin Man, who I'm looking up now, his name is Nipsey Russell.
Nipsey something? Yeah, Nipsey Russell. I don't know who that is, but I think he was like an actor, a comedian or something. Yeah, he was a comedian.
I'm just going to come right out and say it. He can't sing for shit. We have Michael Jackson and Diana Ross. They have their own solos. Obviously, they're professional singers. Then you get to this guy, who is the Tin Man, and he's doing like his little intro song, and I'm just like, dude, this guy can't hit any notes.
I mean, maybe, it also doesn't help that they kind of had him speak in like a robotic voice.
And answer me this, because again, I bounced through the movie a little bit because I didn't want to subject myself to 2 hours of this. So I pieced enough of the plot together and I caught all the main points. Yeah. What the hell was up with his crying thing? That freaked me out. Where he was like crying and like oil was coming out of his face or something.
Well, I think that happens in the original film too, right? Where like the Tin Man cries and he leaks oil and he kind of gets stiff and he needs to be oiled again.
Oh yeah, I didn't know if he was crying. I thought he was just stiff and then they like whatever. Maybe that's it, because that freaked me out. That was this a children's movie, because I'm freaking out right now.
What did you think about the lion? I thought that his.
I thought he was
his
supposed
entrance
to be like,
was like the best thing ever.
It was pretty amazing, mostly because I thought he was supposed to be like a pimp. He was like Pimp Lion, because he had like the big poofy Pimp Lion collar and like the fur everywhere, obviously because he's a lion. But like, he burst out of a lion statue. Like, what?
Yeah, I feel like that's how every character in every movie should be introduced, is they just explode out of a statue and you roar at people.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
Who played the lion, by the way? Ross? Ted Ross.
Yeah, and I want to say... I guess he was...
Oh, dude! He was, shit. He was on the Jeffersons, but I forgot who he played on the Jeffersons, because his face is familiar now. And he was on the Cosby Show, apparently. Who did he play on the Jeffersons? Tell me.
Well, you listeners can figure it out.
Yeah, because I can't find it. I give up. Oh, he was also in Raisin in the Sun. That's funny. So yeah.
Here, can I make a note, kind of expanding on what something you said earlier?
Please do.
You said that the film mostly takes place in New York.
I think.
I agree with you. It felt weird to me, and like. I really like this movie a lot. One of the things that I didn't care for as much was the sets of the film.
Yes,
a lot of the time it felt like they just filmed it in some spot in New York, and they just kind of threw up a couple of fringe decorations. They're like, okay, we're doing it here. They didn't build any. They had a couple, but not very many like real sets for this film.
I was gonna say
that was kind of distracting for me.
I was gonna say, expanding upon that. In the few big set scenes they had, you know, the part where Dorothy and the Scarecrow are first going on the Yellow Brick Road.
That one was.
They sing that song, Ease On Down the Road, which is, I think, one of the more famous songs in the movie.
Yeah, it's a really good song.
They just have this weird, really, really wide shot of just the road, then they're dancing... But they never turn around, so you just see their backs the entire time. I thought that was a weird way to play that off.
It felt like a very, like, stage production type of set. on that particular scene.
Yeah.
So then that's one example where they actually did build one. The ones that annoyed me more than that actually were, like, for example, there was when the evil monkeys or whatever the hell are chasing them on, like, the motorcycles walkways of, I guess, a baseball stadium or something.
I thought it was like a parking garage or something.
Or it might be parking garage. Like, it was something like that.
Yeah, that was weird. You're right.
And the whole Emerald City took place at, like,
in a giant disco thing.
No, but did you realize where that was, though? It was at, like, the base of the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they panned up and they showed the weird loudspeaker thing, and I'm like, wait, is it the Twin Towers?
Yeah.
Okay.
So whatever plaza was at, between those two buildings, that's where, like, the Emerald City was.
I think it's just One World Plaza, or I don't know, whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, it might have been that. I think there was at least a couple of other instances where that happened. But I can understand where they were coming from. I think they were trying to go... Because I was thinking about this, and I feel like the aesthetic of this movie is, like, completely opposite of what the original Wizard of Oz is.
Yes.
I feel like they're, like, completely trying to subvert all of that and be completely opposite of it.
That's what I realized even upon her arrival in Munchkin Land or whatever. I'm like, wait, Munchkin Land, in the original was super colorful. The whole movie was really colorful because obviously they were exploiting that whole Technicolor thing, and yet this version of the movie is, like, dark and gritty as all shit. Like, there's almost no color. And, I mean, Emerald City was kind of colorful because it was, like, it had a very disco-y vibe, but, the Munchkin Land wasn't really colorful. The Yellow Brick Road was kind of colorful. The part with the subway was really weird, by the way, where they were in that subway and then the subway starts... the subway things start to attack them. I'm like, wait, what?
There were a lot, I will admit, there were a lot of, like, really weird scenes like that one. It did serve some purposes.
I do admit, I did like their interpretation of the scene with the poppy fields where they all get high, is how it was basically like a horror.
Oh, that's what that scene was supposed to be.
It was like a horde den or something, and they sprinkle the shit on them and they all get tired or something.
I didn't understand what that scene was.
I think that's my assumption, because Dorothy and I think it was the lion, like, fall asleep. And in the original movie, they fall asleep in the poppy fields.
Well, I have a note here. I have, like, notes that I wrote down for this discussion. And for that scene, I just wrote Cocaine Alley. I think describes it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, from what I could tell, there was a lot of, I guess, for lack of a better term, social commentary in the film. Some of it seemed like it made sense. Some of it seemed kind of just thrown in there, like, what the fuck was up with her never getting a cab? Like, what is that? Like, those little weird cabs, and then she'd be like, cab, and then they would all just drive away all the time.
There might be some symbolism with that, but I'm not gonna...
I'm sure it's like the whole, black man can't get a cab in the city. But, like,
well,
that
I wasn't
seems,
gonna go that direction, but...
I did. But it seems so thrown in. Like, okay...
There's a lot of stuff where you kind of just have to, like, accept it as it is. And look for a lot of logic in it.
I made that mistake of looking for logic.
Let's see. Oh, I really liked the huge statue of Richard Pryor's head.
Oh yeah, that was cool. The big metal one.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
The only thing I didn't like about that is that towards the end you see him, like, peek out of the statue or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm like, dude, like, that spoils the entire point of the original movie. You don't find out that it's a man until the very end. But in this one, it's like, oh, look, it's Richard Pryor. You know?
That's a good point.
I don't know. I mean, maybe...
I do remember, actually, that shot being in the trailer.
Really?
As well. Yeah. It was, like, at the end of the trailer. Like, him... So, like... Maybe they just assume that everyone goes into it already knowing that it's not...
That's my guess. It's like okay, everyone's already seen the Wizard of Oz. They know it's a dude. Let's just play with it.
Yeah.
I kind of did like Richard Pryor in the movie, even though at the end he, like, obviously completely wussed out. But that makes sense, because the original Wizard did too.
Yeah.
The Flying Monkeys being a motorcycle gang was really weird to me. Because, first of all, if they're doing the whole, like, oh, it's black... commentary, all the actors are black. Have you ever seen a black motorcycle gang? Because I haven't. They're always like,
I don't know.
White supremacist dudes. I don't know. I did like the guy that played the Cowardly Lion that we said, Ted Ross. The Tin Man, he can't sing, but I think he played I liked their interpretation of him as the Tin Man, how he was one of those, like, animatronics from, what's the place in New York that has, like, the carnivals and shit? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Ah, shit. Something Island, like Treasure Island? No.
Coney Island?
Thank you. You know, they, in the back in the, I don't think a lot of that's there anymore, but they had like the old carnival stuff back then. Mm-hmm. I think he was supposed to be like an interpretation of one of those animatronic carnival dudes.
Oh yeah, because like at that part of them, I forgot about that. That was another good example of like a set where I was like, what the hell are they doing? Because it was like in the middle of like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I think that's why, because Coney Island, maybe even back then in the 70s used to be like an amusement park of sorts.
So yeah, I mean, it does make some sense. It was just kind of a bizarre choice, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, because I know you kind of jumped around a bit.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I mean when you were watching the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you watched like the end scene.
The one where she sings.
That too, like, actually. I thought that was a
and then
good performance. But the scene right before that, where like they meet the Good Witch of the West or whatever, and
who never showed up before then, by the way. She wasn't in the beginning of the movie, like she wasn't the original.
Yeah, that.
Like I'm like at first I was like, wait, who is this? I'm like, oh, it took me a sec to figure out.
I'm wondering if part of it is because the Good Witch, or Glinda the Good Witch of the South, apparently, is Lena Horne. And I'm wondering if they kind of didn't put her earlier on because they wanted to, like, save her appearance for the end.
Because she's Lena frickin' Horne?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason I can think of.
Maybe.
But I wanted to say that, like, when they kind of explained to all the characters and obviously to us, to the audience as well, you know, hey, you have a heart. You had a heart all along. You had a brain all along. Like, mm-hmm. I felt that message came across to me so much stronger in this version than in the other one. And that might just be because the original Wizard of Oz is something that we all grew up with. We've all seen it, you know, 20 times. We kind of just take it for granted for what it is. And we don't really maybe think about it too much. But like this time, like with this movie, I'm coming into it, you know, the very first time, I feel like the message, I don't know, I felt like it came through much stronger with this one. And I actually wrote a couple of quotes. And I think part of it also has to do maybe perhaps with the personality of Dorothy that we kind of touched on earlier, how she was kind of like scared to go out and meet people and do things,
mm-hmm.
and explore the world. There was one quote, I assumed that Glinda the Good Witch said this. Home is knowing your mind, knowing your heart, knowing your courage. If we know ourselves, we're always home anywhere. I think it comes down to like, you know, be true to yourself, understand who you are, and I think you're going to have a better time exploring the world, which is not a message I really ever got from the original movie, but looking back, I can kind of see that they're sort of trying to do that.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also a longer quote that I want to read, actually, from Dorothy to the Wiz / Richard Pryor, because everyone's like, oh yeah, we actually have heart, we have a brain, I have courage, and then the Wiz is like, well, what can you do for me, Dorothy? Can I have I don't remember what he needed.
Some balls
maybe. She says they've had what they've been searching for all along. I don't know what's in you. You'll have to find it out for yourself. But I do know one thing. You'll never find it in the safety of this room. I tried that all my life. It doesn't work. There's a whole world out there, and you'll have to begin by letting people see who you really are. And obviously she delivers it like much better than I just did, but I felt that message of, you know, figure out who you are, decide the kind of person that you are and what you want out of life, and that's going to open up a lot of doors for you when you're, you know, growing up and meeting people and exploring the world, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I alone there? I mean, am I alone in thinking that comes across. I mean, I don't remember if you watched the scene or not, but
I did, but maybe it's not coming across as strong because I skipped around. I don't know.
Possibly. Did you ever get that message from the original movie?
Kind of. I mean, it seemed more, what do you call it?
Watered down, maybe?
Yeah, watered down, maybe in the original. In this one, I don't know. I mean, it just felt like that, you know, in the end of all this of the film, with the, I don't know, with all these watered down set pieces and weird gritty stuff, it just ended up at the same message as the original.
Mm-hmm.
But because it didn't follow a lot of the plot of the original, and like it didn't seem as strong to me. Like, even like, you know, you don't see Glinda the Good Witch till the end. You barely ever see the evil witch, except for the main scene with her in it. She's not like,
we didn't even talk about that whole.
She's not like an imposing force in the film like the other one, who just showed up in a lot of different scenes to fuck shit up. In this one, you're not even really introduced to her until like 2/3 of the movie. Unless I missed something.
No, she's like in like the last, yeah, like the last quarter of the movie.
And, but okay. By the way, if your weakness is melting from water, why would you have a fire extinguishing system installed in your factory so that if they just pull a little switch, it's like, oh shit, I'm melting?
Well, hindsight is 2020, I guess.
True. Yeah, for those of you that haven't seen the film, Dorothy defeats the evil witch by pulling a fire extinguisher, or fire, what do you call it? Those fire sprinkler system levers. Yeah. And the sprinkler system goes off in this weird sweatshop that the
It's literally a sweatshop.
That the
witch, as in, like, she collects sweat, I think the sign said.
Yeah, yeah. And she melts onto her throne, which looked oddly like a toilet.
Yeah, it did.
And I'm like, oh, look, she's melting into the toilet. She's literally shit. and then all the factory people who are, like, in those weird costumes eventually pop out of them, and they're like just black people in like underwear. skimpy loincloth outfits, and I'm like, what? I'm like, this is a little too sexual for me.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene. I felt it went a little long, but I guess for what they're doing, I mean, it's fine. It's appropriate, I guess. It just, I don't know.
It's inappropriate for children.
I will say that they probably could have cut this down to like an hour and a half.
Oh, easily.
At least. By shortening some stuff, but you know, like I said, I don't want to discourage anybody from trying this movie out.
Yeah.
I did generally really like it. I mean, there were some things that I was kind of leery about, and obviously we've been discussing that.
Mm-hmm.
But
one last thing. Why is there a tornado in a blizzard in New York?
Again, I think we're looking for logic.
That's my problem, is I'm like going through this movie and I'm like, nothing makes any sense.
Oh, that reminds me of like a small point I wanted to make about Dorothy's character.
Uh-huh.
/ Diana Ross. It's, and that scene was where that kind of came to mind for me. Uh-huh. It's funny because for like 95% of the movie, she has like the shy, quiet voice.
Uh-huh.
And she's very timid and everything. But then like the other 5% of her lines are just like flat out screaming.
Screaming?
Like there's nothing in between.
Yeah.
Like she was really, like the first 5-10 minutes in the movie, she's like really quiet and everything. Yeah. And then when Toto runs out of the house into the snowstorm, she just starts like screaming at the top of her lungs.
Yeah, same.
And it's really funny, like,
When she chases away the crows, it's the same thing too. She's like, "Get out of here, motherfucker!" Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, "Oh, she's a scary lady." Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. There's no middle range of emotion. She's either sobbing or screaming. I don't know. I did like the witch and her little bit that she did, because it was Mabel King and it sounded very awesome and kind of funky.
The evil witch?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that was a good bit.
So that was good. But yeah, I don't know. I think Michael Jackson was underutilized. I think Diana Ross was improperly utilized because, like, half of her song she's, like, crying while singing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one... I think that was one scene where I could have done that completely and wouldn't have lost any meaning, was the one after... And I think you already mentioned this. The one after she meets all the munchkins and they're like, follow the yellow brick road. And then she stays there for like 5 minutes singing about how sad and scared she is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really like really lead up to anything.
It's just, I'm just like, get the fuck on the road, woman.
Because they kind of already have established all of that. And I feel like they, like without that scene, it would have played just absolutely fine. But that's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It did seem redundant since she just had a song about being sad. But yeah, I agree, the set pieces seemed half-assed for the most part. There was a lot of really awkward, really, really wide shots to show off these set pieces, but then because of it, the people were, like, really tiny.
That's funny.
Like the Emerald City dance number, it's like, oh, super wide shot showing the whole circle of, you know, Trade Plaza, but all the people dancing just look like tiny dots. I don't know, it seemed... some of the cinematography seemed either half-assed or just like, oh, we have to show off set pieces. Zoom back 300 feet.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird mix between trying to be a stage play and trying to be a movie.
Yes.
I felt like they never really were completely one or the other. It kind of like went back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would say maybe like 75% film. And then like 25% the other way. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, I don't know. That was my impression.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. On the topic of like the set pieces.
Oh, one more thing.
Okay.
What the fuck were those little pink springy puppet dudes? That was really weird. When they go in the subway and there's that guy who's like a homeless peddler, and then you see these creepy puppets that's making these really scary noises. I was like,
yeah, that was kind of terrifying.
I was tripping balls at that part. I was like, no. So
yeah, that was a little weird. What I was gonna say was, on the topic of like us kind of complaining about some of the set pieces basically just being spots in New York that were sparsely decorated. And again, I realize it's kind of like the aesthetic and the style they were going for, so I can't complain too much, but I assume that wasn't a budget thing, because I mean, they were able to get some pretty big name people in this movie.
True.
And it was a long movie, so it's like they definitely had money.
It says the budget for the film was $24 million, and it made $21
million. Oh, so it didn't even break even.
Nope.
So part of me was wondering, like, if they obviously had money to get big names in this movie and everything, why didn't they spend that money on sets as well?
I don't know.
But again, it could very well just be the style they were going for, I guess. I mean, I appreciate them doing, you know, following that vision. I think they followed it very well for what it was. But I think anyone coming into this, I would say, don't expect it to be anything like the original Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I mean, it's basically like a complete opposite.
Pretty much. Yeah, again, like I said, I probably watched an actual like 50 minutes of it because I bounced around through like a lot, some of the scenes where it's like, oh, and they're moving on to the next large set piece, okay. Mm-hmm. But so I didn't get the full dose of
the full 2 hour dose
blackness. But I don't know, I think the two things that disappointed me most was I was so stoked about Michael Jackson being in a musical because he can sing and he's Michael Jackson, and he just was, I don't want to say he underperformed, but they didn't use him as much as I think they should have. I think he should have been Dorothy.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I like the songs. I mean, for the most part, the songs themselves were, aside from the ones where Diana Ross is just crying, The the songs themselves are really good. I liked that. I really liked the song that the witch sang. I forgot the name of the song, but it was really funky. The
Don't Give Me No Bad News.
Yes, thank you. The only one that I was just like, oh, okay, was the end song where they arrive at the Emerald City, and it's just this huge disco number. And I'm like, oh, wait, disco was popular during this time period. That's why there's disco shit everywhere.
Actually, you mentioned something, I don't want to extend this too long. I think we are trying to wrap it up slowly, but...
Slowly.
You were saying earlier how there was a lot of, social commentary in this. I felt that Emerald City scene was really strong social commentary of, buying into fashion trends and stuff.
Oh yeah, they were singing about green, and then the wizard's like, "No, I like red now," and then everything turns red.
And they're like, "Red's the best. Every other color is stupid." And then like it 30 seconds later, it changes to blue, and they change it again. I felt like that was kind of poking fun at fashions and fads and stuff, which is funny because disco itself was a fad.
Yeah, this
is 1978. So disco, was alive and kicking at this. This was when it was most popular, but then, a couple years later, it was completely dead. So I guess it's almost a commentary on itself.
Yeah, an unintentional commentary on the fadingness of disco.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, that was an interesting commentary. More so than most of them. Some of them just seem shoehorned in there. But yes. So yeah, that was how I felt about the movie. Hence why I didn't watch it all. I did like Richard Pryor, though. I thought he was funny. Because Richard Pryor.
Yes. I've been trying... I've been hoping that I could actually speak more about the songs themselves a bit. Unfortunately, I have not been able to get Spotify to work, and I cannot log in for the life of me right now.
That's weird.
So we can't speak too much about the songs. We mentioned a couple. I think that's actually probably one of the more bigger reasons that we actually watched this movie, aside from some of the names in this, was actually the type of music as well fits well pretty well with our show.
Yeah.
We did mention "Ease On Down the Road." I think that's kind of the signature song of this movie.
Mm.
And that one's really fun. I did like that one.
Yeah, I don't know if my opinion would have been different if we had watched it together and I had watched the whole thing. But
maybe
watching it by myself and skimming, I think because I just knew I was gonna come at it from a surface perspective, I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna skim through this and get the gist.
Yeah,
I think maybe that's why so much less made sense to me, because I'm just like, what am I watching right now?
I mean, definitely there were parts where stuff didn't make a whole lot of sense, but yeah, I think maybe watching the whole thing might have improved your opinion of it a little bit. But again, it's a 2-hour movie with a lot of weird shit in it, so it's not necessarily for everybody.
True.
All right, well, so now you listeners have a recommendation, or maybe not. we'll just letting you know that it exists.
A condemnation.
Sure.
A recondemnation. No.
Yes. Of The Wiz, and that came out in 1978. If you guys want, if you have the patience to sit through the whole movie, let us know what you thought if you watched it. Tell us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or if you hated the movie, like Kyle, you can also tell us there. And then we'll be your friend.
I didn't hate it. I just think it's a movie that you really need to watch while on some sort of substance.
That would definitely help, I think.
Yeah.
I think it would definitely help.
It would make it go faster.
Let's see, we're on SoundCloud. We just finally, I think yesterday or today, as of this recording, was our first month on SoundCloud. And I was really happy with how that turned out, so I'm going to keep paying for it because it's worth it. And so, that's soundcloud.com/getyourfunk. You can follow us there. We're also on Twitter @getyourfunk. Oh, and iTunes as well.
So, yeah, this has been your Wiztastic host, Kyle.
And this has been your... This has been your dog, Toto, Peter.
We love you, and keep listening to us.